World News Today, brought to you by Continental Radio and Television Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set. By shortwave broadcast, direct from important overseas stations, as well as the leading news centers of our own country, CBS correspondents are waiting to bring you a complete report from the world's political and battlefronts. But first, here's Doug Edwards.
The big Allied offensive on the Tunisian front is rolling. American troops have captured Fondouk, and the British are knifing ahead both in the north and south. RAF bombers have given Berlin its heaviest pounding of the war. American planes have raided Rouen. The Red Army has captured seven settlements in the Smolensk area. American planes have battered at Jap bases throughout the Southwest Pacific, and enemy bombers have retaliated with raids on our installations in the Solomons. Now for our first report from overseas, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Algiers, Charles Collingwood reporting.
This is Charles Collingwood at Allied Force Headquarters in North Africa. The 8th Army's attack on the Merritt Line is gathering momentum. In the frontal attack on the line itself, new advances were made southwest of the village of Merritt. But what is much more spectacular, the British force, which swept all the way around Rommel's flank, is now in the outskirts of El Hama. All you have to do is to look at a map to see what this means. El Hama, which is marked on our map with the little palm trees that mean an oasis, is in the exact and geographical rear of the Merritt Line. It's not a threat to Rommel's rear, it is his rear. And from El Hama to Gabbett on the coast is less than 20 miles. North of El Hama, all the way up to Sirte, American forces are gradually overflowing onto the coastal plain. El Guitar, McNassee, and now today's communique says that we have taken Fondouk, which is opposite the port of Sirte and only 50 miles away from it. If you are one of those who subscribe to the belief that sooner or later, Rommel is going to have to pull out of the Merritt Line and move into northern Tunisia, the implications of all this are enormous. From El Hama to Fondouk, there are Allied columns aiming to intersect Rommel's line of retreat. Each one is a potential threat. Each one is a potential trap for Rommel, in which a general could lose an army. Of course, they are still just potential traps. And so far, Rommel doesn't seem to have started to pull out of the Merritt Line. But the threats are all there, and the strategy of the thing is something to watch. There's other strategy in North Africa to watch, the political strategy of General de Gaulle and General Giraud. General de Gaulle is coming here all right, and the announced intention of the two generals is to work out an agreement. The impression here is that some kind of an agreement, some kind of union, will be worked out. But the question is, what kind? And that's where the strategy comes in. Both leaders want to bring about the union of all fighting Frenchmen, but both want to keep their own individuality and the individuality of their organizations. The de Gaulle-Giraud meeting won't be exactly a battle, but it won't be exactly a love feast either. This is Charles Collingwood in North Africa, returning you to New York.
More news in just a moment, but first here's Warren Sweeney with a word from Admiral Radio.
Should we begin planning now to meet the problems of the post-war world? According to recent surveys, the majority of people say we should. Whether or not you agree with that opinion, you'll want to hear all proposals and views, for the post-war world will be your world. Radio, now and in the future, will present every plan and opinion. Because it will, you'll want to be certain your radio is ready at the flip of a switch to bring in any program you want to hear. Admiral dealers have devised a simple, effective, and economical method to relieve you of worry about radio failure. Simply call your Admiral dealer and ask him to check your radio twice a year regularly. In other words, put the responsibility for keeping your radio in perfect condition squarely on his shoulders. Your Admiral dealer will accept that responsibility gladly. He'll anticipate trouble, order any replacement you might need in advance, and probably have it, despite shortages, in time to keep your set in continuous action. Above all, your Admiral dealer, backed by the entire Admiral organization, will put his knowledge and facilities at work so that your radio gives tip-top performance throughout the duration. Relieve yourself of worry. Call your Admiral dealer Ask him to check your radio twice a year, regularly. He'll do the rest. And now, back to Doug Edwards.
On the vast Russian battlefields, the Red Army appears to be consolidating its positions and beating off Nazi attacks. For a direct report on the situation, Admiral Radio takes you now to CBS Moscow. Bill Downs reporting.
This is the first time that this phrase has appeared in the Russian communiques since last summer's lull in the fighting. It is true that the fighting has slackened all along the Russian front, but it can hardly be called a lull. There still are attacks and counterattacks on the Smolensk front, and the Germans are still trying to gain effective initiative at Belgorod and on the Bryansk sector. The Red Army continues its painful advance through the mud of the Kuban. It's true that the front is comparatively quiet, but it's the kind of quiet you would get if you put a lid on a live volcano. The Red Army's railroad battalion has achieved something of an engineering miracle. In a little over 2 weeks, they have succeeded in opening the vital Moscow-Veliki-Luki trunk railroad. The first military train moved over this railroad yesterday. The repair of this stretch of 280 miles of railroad was one of the most difficult assignments any engineering corps ever had. The railroad has been the center of a battlefield since the early days of the German invasion. It has been bombed by both German and Russian planes. Soviet partisans have blown it sky high at 100 places. But even before Veliki-Luki was taken, the Red Army Railroad Corps went to work. They found that besides widening the gauge of the railroad tracks, they would have to virtually reset every railroad rail. You see, the Germans not only destroyed all switches and frogs, but they also sent men along the lines with heavy sledgehammers who every 50 feet or so just knocked out a piece of railroad rail. I've seen this type of destruction every place where the German army has passed. You probably couldn't run an American streamliner at the speed of 100 miles an hour over the reconstructed Veliki-Luki Moscow railroad line today, but you can jog along at 20 to 30 miles an hour with heavy freight and munitions and arms. And that's what's happening today as the Soviet command reinforces its Veliki-Luki garrison, the garrison which is closer to the borders of the Soviet Union than any other group pushed to the east by the Axis invaders. And this is Bill Downs returning you now to CBS in New York.
Within the past hour, our Army and Navy announced new air blows against the Japs in Burma and in the North and South Pacific. For this news and details on the rationing program, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Washington, Lee White reporting.
There's been a flare-up in the area warfare in the South Pacific. A Navy communique reports 6 more American raids on Japanese positions and 2 Japanese bombings of American positions. Instead of bombing Nauru Island once last Thursday night, it now appears that we made 2 attacks. Nauru is an isolated, once British, now Japanese-held base 770 miles due north of Guadalcanal. Catalina patrol bombers raided it the first time, starting fires. And in the second attack, the one already reported, liberators scored hits on enemy installations. Light bombers and fighters made 2 more attacks on Munda, 1 on Vila and 1 on Rendova Island in the South Pacific. And in the North Pacific, a force of Mitchell medium bombers scored hits on the airdrome and camp on Kiska in the Aleutians. The Japanese bombed Canton Island in the Phoenix Group on Thursday night. And early Friday morning, 7 enemy planes made 5 sorties over Guadalcanal. But in only 2 of them were they able to drop any bombs. From India, the Army Air Force reports that 2 formations of liberators bombed Rangoon on Friday night, scoring hits on the railway station, the airdrome, and the harbor area. Meat rationing begins tomorrow, and from the looks of things, most butcher shops are going to be short, at least for a time, until the rationing machinery can get underway. The OPA estimates it will take at least 2 weeks for things to start running smoothly. And meanwhile, Americans will just have to be patient. Senator Ball and a number of other senators and congressmen, however, are thinking about increasing the rations for people doing heavy labor. They think the current rate is plenty for white-collar people, but that the average worker in a war plant ought to have more than 2 pounds of meat and fats a week. Maybe he will, even without congressional action. For the OPA is prepared to raise the ration just as soon as supplies are plentiful enough to warrant such a step. Last night, it removed dried fruits from rationing altogether, and it revised the point values of other processed foods depending upon the demand. Some went up, and some went down. I now return you to CBS, New York, and Doug Edwards.
Now here in our New York studio is Columbia's military analyst, Major George Fielding Elliott.
The news from the Pacific is interesting because of a shift in location out into the middle of that vast ocean. The Japanese have made a light raid, probably its actual purpose was reconnaissance, on our base on Canton Island. And we have made two raids on the Japanese installations on Nauru Island, as Mr. White has just told you. Canton Island is a way station on our main trans-Pacific line of communications from Hawaii to Australia and the Solomons. Canton lies a little over 2,000 miles south-southwest of Pearl Harbor and about the same distance northeast of Guadalcanal. It has long been recognized that the Japanese, from their outpost positions in the Gilbert and Marshall Islands, which lie west and northwest of Canton, might at any time try to raid our line of communications. They could hardly hope to seize and hold any of our well-defended bases along this line, of which Canton is one. But if they were willing to pay the cost in ships and aircraft, they might cause us enough trouble so that we would have to divert our attention to protecting this area, at least for the time being, and thus they might prevent us from getting set for a large-scale offensive toward Rabaul, for instance. To do this in one way or another, at a minimum cost, is one of the main Japanese objectives now. The storm is gathering, and the Japanese are trying to keep it from breaking over their heads until they are better prepared to receive it. Our raids on Nauru are entirely consistent with the possibility of Japanese preparations for mid-Pacific raids. If such preparations were underway, Nauru would be an important transit base for Japanese aircraft. It lies almost midway between Guadalcanal and the Marshalls. But Nauru has other values. It is an outpost for the Marshalls, on the southward. And from the Marshalls, the Japanese have launched some of their attacks on Guadalcanal. We might be intending to move toward the Marshalls ourselves. In that case, Nauru would also be important. On the whole, therefore, we could only say that the spreading out of the air operations on both sides is interesting and may forecast future developments which may come suddenly and dramatically if they come at all.
Vice President Wallace, on his South American tour, is now visiting in Chile, where he's addressed a special session of the Congress. For a direct report on Wallace's activities, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Santiago. Charles Griffin reporting.
For the first time in history, a Vice President of the United States visits Chile. Vice President Henry Wallace's plane reached Chilean territory on Friday at 10:15, and on its southbound trip, overflew the rich nitrate of soda deposits at Pedro de Valdivia and Maria Elena. The enormous copper mines at Chuquicamata and Porterillos, among the largest in the world. And close at its right, the important iron ore deposits at El Topo. All of these powerful enterprises are American-owned, and millions of tons of these essential war minerals are shipped almost every day to the United States. Close by, too, for hours, could be seen the almost unprotected coast, which the Japanese cannot reach in spite of repeated threats because of the control of the United States fleets over the South Pacific. In Santiago, after one of the greatest public demonstrations ever staged here, Vice President Wallace established personal contact with prominence in different fields. Yesterday, President Rios invited Vice President Wallace to a private lunch in his country residence overlooking the capital. The vision of these tremendously important northern enterprises of vital significance during the war was in the minds of all as conversation covered the problems of increased production, transportation, and protection. Today, Vice President Wallace will be the guest at the National Open Air Stadium, sitting 8,000. And tonight, President Rios stages the dinner at the Moneda Palace, sitting close to 200. Tomorrow, the party leaves by train for the southern provinces and the coal fields. Chile has ambitious plans for hydroelectric power development, for increased capitalization of her industries, for shipping facilities, for raw materials and new markets. But above all, for permanent and stable post-war economic conditions with the United States. Chile confidently expects that practical results will follow Mr. Wallace's visit to this country, and this visit ends on June the 4th after very important contact both in the center, south, and north of the country. I now return you to the Columbia Broadcasting System in New York.
Across the Atlantic, American planes have been over France again, and the British are getting details on the latest night raid on Berlin. For this news and an interview with an American Army officer attached to our 8th Air Force, Admiral Radio takes you now to CBS London. John Daly reporting.
United States Army 8th Air Force Headquarters has just announced that in daylight today, our heavy bombers carried out their sixth raid on the important rail center of Rouen in France. Bombing results were good in spite of heavy opposition. One of our bombers is missing, and four of the Allied fighters, which gave excellent cover, did not come home. No figure of enemy losses has been announced, but several German fighters are reported to have been destroyed. There are also more details of last night's RAF raid on Berlin. The Air Ministry has announced that it was the heaviest raid yet made on Berlin. About 900 tons of bombs were dropped, twice the weight ever dropped in a single raid on London by the Germans. Last night's weather was good, and the bombing is described as concentrated. The news of RAF and American air activity over Germany and France is getting a good deal of attention here in England. Spring has come, and with it an urgent wish for the opening of a second front in Europe. Allied air activity is considered the opening gun of that second front, and present air activity adds up to a softening up of the German defense before invasion. How the RAF and the United States Air Forces are doing the job can best be told by the men who fly the planes. Beside me is Colonel Stanley T. Ray of Birmingham, Alabama. He commands one of the groups of the 8th Air Force, a group which has made 30 missions over Germany and France. Yesterday, Colonel Ray was awarded the Silver Star for gallantry in action while leading his group on those missions. Colonel Ray, just what are we doing to soften up the continent for invasion?
Overall, we're reducing the enemy's war potential. We're bombing his production centers where he produces the things he will need to repel an invasion of Europe by the United Nations.
What is the most important factor?
We are fortunate in having England as a base from which an invasion can be launched. But a base will be of no use unless we can get supplies to it to support an invasion. That makes a submarine our number one problem now. And that is why the 8th Air Force has repeatedly raided Saint-Nazaire, Lorient, La Palisse, and Brest. In those raids, we hit the German submarine operating bases on the French coast. That's one phase of softening up. Another has been our raids on northwest Germany designed primarily to get at production centers of submarines. In the raid on Vegesack, pictures taken during the raid and after show that we inflicted extremely heavy damage on the most important sub-building works available to the Germans.
Well, what about the raids on places like Emden and Ham and Rouen and Amiens?
Those are important rail communication centers. By striking these centers, we interrupt the enemy's flow of raw materials to factories and the flow of finished war goods to the using fronts. Thus, the destruction of trackage and of freight cars and engines in the raid on Rouen today will have a lasting effect on the flow of supplies to the German submarine bases on the French coast.
Well, Colonel, what can we look for when the 8th Air Force gets the hundreds of planes which General Acre, the commander of the 8th Air Force, said would arrive early this summer?
We've had a hard winter, but we're out of the woods now. When we get those planes, we'll send groups of them to many different targets at the same time. In addition to German industry and communications, we will destroy the German Air Force in its production centers, on its aerodromes, and in the air. We, the RAF and the United States Air Force, will keep the German air raid warning service on a 24-hour basis. We'll send over so many planes that the German anti-aircraft gunners will be beating their heads on the concrete. And since we must come to grips with the Germans on land before we can win the war, the 8th Air Force and the RAF will prepare the way. And then, when this land force goes in, we will provide an umbrella of bombers and fighters which will strike as part of that force. Oh, yes. There's one more thing that the air arm of the United Nations is doing to soften up for invasion. German morale is not cracked yet, but we do know that the RAF night raids and our day raids have already affected morale, and they will have an ever-increasing effect. I wouldn't want to be a German in Germany this summer. There will be no future in it.
And now, back to CBS New York and Doug Edwards.
You've just heard Colonel Ray of our American Army Air Force in Britain. Now here in our New York studio, home after 7 months in London, is Joe Alex Morris, foreign editor of the United Press. Joe, what do you think these increasingly heavy American and British raids on the continent are leading up to?
They're leading up to our grand assault on Hitler. You can be sure of that, Doug. But last night's big raid on Berlin was just a part of a long, hard job. Our air offensive is such a vast undertaking that the overall picture cannot easily be seen by us ordinary citizens. But I had a chance in Britain to talk to the men who are doing the flying and to some of the men who direct the whole operation.
What impressed you most, Joe, in your talks with those fellows?
I'd say the vast amount of organization required. Usually, we think of a bomber as having a crew of half a dozen or a dozen men, and perhaps we think of the ground crew of half a dozen more men. But actually, there are dozens of other men behind each bomber. Men who are busy at desks. Others who work day and night repairing or overhauling planes. And if any one of them fails in his job, the whole operation is endangered.
Well, it certainly is a job.
Well, there's another side to the picture. You get a glimpse of that when you talk to General Andrews, who is our commander in the European theater, or to Air Marshal Harris, chief of the RAF Bomber Command. They have the job of putting the whole machine together so that it'll work.
I'm beginning to see, Joe, how many difficulties must be overcome as we move toward our goals of all-out bombing of Germany.
Yes, and we still have a long way to go. We can say that there are really two goals, Doug. Both are essential preliminaries to victory. The first is steady day and night bombing. This is a long-range proposition, and the results are not immediately evident at the war fronts. By that, I mean that if we knock out a factory making U-boat engines at Munich, the effect will not be felt in the Battle of the Atlantic until months later. But it will be felt. Or even if we merely destroy the factory streetcar lines, or gas mains, or electric light and power lines, then we have also struck a blow that will, much later of course, be of importance in safeguarding our convoys. Because anything that disrupts production of U-boats is going to help win the war.
Well, how about that second goal?
The second goal is perhaps the most important. It is the destruction of the German Air Force. And to a great extent, that will be America's job in the final battle for the skies over Europe. We must force the Luftwaffe to fight, not just occasionally, but day after day. We must attack with vastly superior numbers and vastly superior firepower.
Well, that's where our flying fortresses come in.
Yes, their daylight raids are very important in moving us nearer to our goal. Not only can we hit specific targets that the RAF might miss at night, but we can force the enemy to come into the air and fight, and we can knock him down.
Of course, we don't come out of that kind of fighting unscathed, Joe.
No, indeed. That kind of air war is costly, and we must expect greater losses as our offensive grows. But remember, it's still more costly to the enemy. The Germans have learned what it costs to tackle a formation of flying fortresses, to fly into a battery of fortress guns that may fire 100 bright, ugly chunks of steel every second. They have learned, and they will profit by their lesson, but they won't like it.
Thank you, Joe Alex Morris, foreign news editor of the United Press, for telling us what you observed about our Allied air offensive during the 7 months you've just spent in Great Britain.
Now, here's a message from our sponsor. Walk into either of Admiral Radio's two great plants. What will you see? Batteries of punch presses, screw machines, electric welding apparatus, and countless other intricate devices, all being operated at top speed by the capable hands of Admiral workers. You'll see Admiral research technicians, radio and electronic engineers, busy in their laboratories, where developments that might take years in peacetime are often crowded into a few brief months under the pressure of war. You'll see a never-ending stream of radio and electronic equipment flowing from Admiral assembly lines, off to America's fighting Army and Navy on the battlefronts. Admiral, like all America, believes in the principles for which this war is being fought. For Admiral is firmly convinced that when the Axis is destroyed and all men receive the blessings of the four freedoms, we will enjoy a new and lasting prosperity. Thus, Admiral, in peacetime, the world's largest manufacturer of radio phonograph combinations with automatic record changers, is now employing every facility, bending every effort to build the radio and electronic equipment America's fighting men need to seek out the enemy and destroy him, and so bring us nearer to freedom for all men. Mail from home is the greatest of all morale builders. Write to that man of yours in service. Write often, even though he doesn't always have an opportunity to answer. And when you write to men stationed overseas, use V-mail so your letters will be delivered in the shortest possible time. Your post office or your stationer can supply you with special V-mail stationery, so get some and write. World News Today is brought to you each Sunday at this hour by Continental Radio and Television Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set. Be sure to listen again next Sunday when Admiral brings you World News Today. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.